now at aceretirement.org. Brought to you by AARP and...
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York, where a grand jury has just voted to indict former President Donald Trump. CBS's Robert Costa kicks off our team coverage.
This is a historic moment to have a former president indicted. This has been confirmed to CBS News by Trump's own attorney, Susan Nicholas. She has told CBS News the former president has been indicted.
The jury had been investigating whether Mr. Trump falsified business records during his first presidential campaign in 2016.
This is about hush money payments made in 2016 by his former fixer, Michael Cohen, to Stormy Daniels, the porn star. Under scrutiny is former President Trump's role in this entire operation. They've been talking to witnesses extensively in recent months, focusing especially on Michael Cohen and his testimony about Trump's role in this entire episode.
And the news is shocking because it's the first time a U.S. president has ever faced criminal charges. But we should note a specific charge or charges have not been made public yet. So the big question, what happens now?
Our sources in the Manhattan District Attorney's office in operations say that the former president would be brought in like anyone else who was indicted. We will see him surrender to authorities. Exactly how that plays out could be negotiated in terms of whether there's a so-called perp walk or seeing the former president in handcuffs. But he will be fingerprinted regardless of any negotiation, and there will be an arraignment in open court.
Again, we are still waiting on specifics, and an arraignment date has not been set yet. We should also note that Mr. Trump has denied these allegations. We're hearing from our legal analyst, Jessica Levinson, with more on this indictment.
That's where we get the first charge, what we think will be the first charge, the falsification of business records. And then in order for that to be kicked up to a felony, there's going to have to be another charge of intent to commit or conceal another crime. That's where the big legal questions are. Is that other crime, another state crime, or another federal crime?
But it's not the only case against former President Trump. Here's CBS's Catherine Herridge.
There are a number of state and federal investigations specifically the special counsel looking at the alleged mishandling of classified information after President Trump left office. And then, of course, the Georgia case, which has gained a lot of steam in recent weeks. That's the allegation that the former president was looking for about 11,000 votes around the time of the November election.
Again, we are following breaking news out of New York, where a grand jury has just voted to indict former President Donald Trump. They'd been investigating whether Mr. Trump falsified business records in 2016. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and maximum success with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, your personal injury attorneys dedicated to helping you get the justice you deserve. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The cost of Wisconsin State Supreme Court race is now three times the previous national record. A review by WisPolitics.com finds spending on the race adding up to about $45 million. Political insiders say the real price is probably even higher when you figure in online and social media ads that aren't reported to the state and are tough to track. There's an arrest in the case of an anti-abortion group office bombing in Madison last year. Nobody was hurt, but there was a lot of damage. The federal prosecutor's office says a 29-year-old Madison man was arrested at the airport in Boston Tuesday. He was planning to fly to Guatemala. In sports, it's baseball's opening day. The Brewers play the Cubs in Chicago this afternoon. Tonight, the Bucks host Boston in a game with big playoff seeding implications. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The spring election is Tuesday, April 4th. It's being called one of the most important in the country, with candidates for one state Supreme Court seat on the ballot.
Vote. Then tune to your local Civic Media radio station for coverage you won't find anywhere else.
It kicks off at 7 p.m. with a special As Goes Wisconsin.
Then at 8, News Director Terry Bell has results with reporters checking in from around the state.
Election coverage live Tuesday, April 4th, starting at 7 on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com. Native Roots Radio is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy!
65, more at CruitersLoungeMN.com.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up!
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, Henry Cutter Jr.
Because all the hippies are trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot, and we discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Ogama, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
And this portion of the show is supported by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Hey, Ogama, it's a big day here at Macho Hodos here in St. Paul. We had the Twins won. Trump's indicted just a little bit ago. And we're going to get 4 to 7 inches of snow here.
Yeah, on the second to last day of March. It's April, day after tomorrow, and we're getting another 6 inches of snow. It's going to be one of those years, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have some flooding for sure down here in the Twin Cities on the mighty Mississippi, and you have a lot of snow up there. But hey, let's talk about the news. I didn't want to steal all your news, but I was just so excited. I wanted to talk about Trump and the Twins, or the Twins and the Trump. And as you know, Ogama Native Roots Trading Post is going to have a kiosk out at every Twins game here for 80 games. And if they make the playoffs, which it looks like today because they're undefeated, we'll be there for more games. So, hey, Ogama, with the news that you don't hear anywhere else, welcome, Ogama.
Hey, Buju, Indian relatives. This is Ogama Ganuakwe. I am a citizen of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota, and I have some news and information for you here. According to CNN, former president, Donald Trump and his team said that they were blindsided by the timing of the indictment today. Trump's team had basically planned for an indictment the last 2 weeks, but then had been told that the grand jury would not be meeting on the case and believed that the indictment would not come for several more weeks. So apparently they were not expecting it today. But many people are very, very excited to see that Trump is being indicted. He will be perp walked, which means he'll be walked out on the street by law enforcement, most likely. And then once he's inside, his fingerprints and mugshot will be taken. And in New York State, mugshots are not automatically made public. So we might have to wait for somebody to leak that one, and we'll kind of see what's going to happen. Normally, people are handcuffed as they come into court, but since the Secret Service is technically going to be involved, they're not really sure if that's going to be the case. And then the judge is going to advise Trump of the charges against him, and the grand jury indictment was filed today, and charges have not been officially announced publicly, but we can, I think most of us bet that there are many. So many people, and myself included, are excited to see that some things are justice is being served to an extent, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Other news here that's, I guess, national news, international news, I suppose. Today, the Vatican responded to indigenous demands and formally said that they do not back the doctrine of discovery. And that is, so for those of you who don't know, the doctrine of discovery was a 15th century papal statement that basically colonial era people used to legitimize the seizure of native lands on the basis, and it also forms some of the basis of some of the property laws today. So according to the statement from the Vatican at CNN, the decree does not adequately reflect the equal dignity and rights of indigenous peoples that have never been considered expressions of and have never been considered expressions of the Catholic faith. And the Vatican's Development Education Office has marked this historic recognition. And unfortunately, at the same time, Pope, I believe, is hospitalized this week as well with a respiratory infection. So that has been interesting to watch kind of at the same time, but this is a really good first step, I think. I mean, at least to me, an indigenous person, and a lot of indigenous leaders who have already commented on this, say it is a really good first step, but it does not address the rescinding of them themselves. They can condemn them, but they haven't fully rescinded them, and it does not put any distance between that and acknowledging the actual abuses that the Vatican or the Catholic Church has done against indigenous people worldwide. But it is a really good first step to that, to truth telling, which we talked about a lot on the show yesterday. Right, Robert?
Yeah, definitely. I agree 100%. It's a good day here in Turtle Island. I'm really happy and ecstatic that you and I, if we had done any of these things, we'd be already in prison counting the days of getting out.
I don't know about counting the days. It would be counting the years, Robert. Right. So, you know, there's definitely some things that are, there's some, what's the word I'm looking for, Robert? Now I can't.
Oh, now you're getting like me. What the?
Yeah, I guess, it's kind of been a little bit of a hectic day for me. Also from CNN, there was a train derailment today in Minnesota, right, near the city of Raymond, which is about 100 miles due west of the Twin Cities. The train was hauling ethanol, and it derailed early this morning and ignited several rail cars and forced a mandatory evacuation of the city of about 800 people. 8 hours after the derailment, the fire was still burning. The EPA is on scene to conduct air quality monitoring, and they said there was four cars that contained ethanol ruptured and caught fire, and they continue to burn, and that four additional cars containing ethanol may also release. The train is operated by BNSF Railway and derailed around 1 a.m. according to CNN, and homes within a half a mile of the derailment were evacuated in Kandy, Ojai County. As of now, there have been no injuries reported as a result of the crash, but residents are indicated that they could safely return to their homes, and there's road detours in the area. And there's a foam that authorities are going to be using to put out the blaze. And Minnesota Governor Tim Walz did assure citizens during a conference this afternoon that the chemicals within that do not contain PFAS or forever chemicals. So were hoping, and the governor as well said, that the relatively frozen ground in the area will likely help with the remediation efforts. The ethanol would burn off more easily rather than soaking into the ground. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is also going to work to ensure that there's no runoff into local water sources, but we'll see what happens. This crash is a little different from the East Palestine wreck. East Palestine, Ohio had been carrying hazardous chemicals, and that disaster had a days-long inferno, which just spewed poisonous fumes and killed thousands of fish. And people in East Palestine were wondering about a variety of health issues that are likely from the wreck. And while both freight trains were carrying highly flammable and potentially toxic chemicals, such as vinyl chloride in Ohio and ethanol in Minnesota, the preliminary information here in Minnesota suggests that 14 of the train's 40 cars were carrying hazardous material rather than all of them. And the train was also carrying corn syrup. So there's some other things that are not flammable. So hopefully this will not be quite as bad. But both chemicals are toxic if they're inhaled or come into contact with skin or ingested. Ethanol is highly soluble in water, meaning it'll be easy to dilute. But dilution is only one way to reduce risk. So these are still going to be problems. So keep an eye out in those areas. Prayers are out to those areas that have been, have been evacuated. And then just one more quick one before we go to commercial, Robert. Flood the Courts online support tomorrow at 9 a.m. on Zoom for Aiken County, and also in person in Aiken County. Go on over to Stop Line 3 and get some information on that.
Right on. Peeny Gigi, thanks for the news. Up next, Robert Lilligren. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Judge Janet Protasiewicz is running to provide you with the justice you deserve.
For years, Judge Janet has supported the youth and underrepresented communities.
Judge Janet has strong values for public education and believes in setting our communities up for success.
Judge Janet believes that Native rights are sovereign rights.
Judge Janet understands the importance of issues such as missing and murdered Indigenous women, treaty rights, and hunting and gathering.
Unlike her opponent, Judge Janet not only talks the talk, but walks the walk.
Judge Janet knows the impact that our courts have on our communities, and she will bring integrity and fairness to the court.
Judge Janet Protasiewicz will fight for us. Let's fight for them.
Make a plan to vote by April 4th.
Find your polling place at vote.wisdoms.org. That's vote.wisdoms.org.
vote.wisdoms.org/EV.
Paid for by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin as an in-kind to Janet for Justice.
Bijou, I am Oshawashko Gijig. I'm from Red Lake Nation, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Hey, this portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Development Institute.
Hey, we have Robert Lilligren, the CEO of Native American Development Institute, NADCI, we like to say. And Robert, I'm giddy. The twins won today. Trump's going to jail, and you've been sugar bushing. I don't know what else can be better than that.
There you go. I thought you were going to say you're giddy about Trump's indictment, which is enough to be giddy about, right?
Right. Exactly. That's the way I feel. I'm totally excited. It's about time. Yeah.
Finally, right? Finally. And, you know, I think this might be a situation where this is kind of opening the gates, right? The first president to be criminally charged, first former president to be criminally charged. Then, of course, there are other investigations going on. So hopefully once that seal is broke, we can see more of this kind of activity.
Exactly. We'll get back to that. But hey, earlier, was it today or yesterday, you were out sugar bushing, and why don't you tell our audience what you were doing? And I didn't know Porky's Place was still around. That's exciting.
It is still around. And so it was interesting. I started my day, you know, with the staff from NACD and some board representation. And we went out to Porky's Sugar Bush Camp out in Maple Plain, Minnesota, which is a far western suburb here in Hennepin County, the same county Minneapolis is in. And Porky's is a long established place, right, Robert? It's been around for about 50 years.
Yeah.
And it's just incredible. And so they have a little bit of a scaled back operation. I think they're tapping 100 maples now. I think at their peak, they've been maybe 300.
Wow.
And it was, we didn't work the trees when we were out there, but we were helping to filter and to bottle the syrup. And it was wonderful. And it contrasted beautifully with my afternoon where I was over at the state capitol at the Senate office building testifying. So I got some beautiful outdoor traditional time before I had to go into much more colonized space.
Yeah, that's awesome. And just before we get too far into it, Porky was a teacher at Red Schoolhouse, and he used to take the kids out there sugar bushing, and now many, many years later, it's still going on, and that's really, really exciting. I asked you where you were, and when you said that, I was like, all right, that's still going
on. Yeah, they were really proud of the fact that just this year they've had, I think, over 300 school kids just this year out there. And it's not a huge camp. I mean, that's a lot of groups coming out there, and you can tell how much they just love having the young people there. And the whole operation is so impressive. And the land that it's on has now been put into permanent conservation.
Wow.
And so it will remain, you know, the way it is. Not just the foreseeable future, really forever.
Wow, that's really cool, and what a great way to start out with your staff. And when I saw that staff picture, I just remembered how we had talked many times now about how you've switched the switch with your staff, and how great that has been for them and for you and for the community. I think of that all the time, Robert.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you know, we just tried to be really deliberate, and we always were deliberate about indigenizing the way that we do business, indigenizing the organization. And then with COVID, that really kind of added urgency to the conversation. And with guidance from several of our elders, we've been really putting in place a lot of our native values. You know, one of them, we've talked about this before, is sort of flipping the script from the colonized approach and instead, you know, we take care of ourselves first, our families second, and then our community and organization third. And that was a lesson I learned, kind of a tough lesson, from our local elder, Linda Eagle Speaker, during some coaching during COVID. And I kept pushing back and saying, no, Linda, we're indigenous. It's the whole. We care about the whole. And she just kept calmly saying, the indigenous way is care for yourself, your family, then your community. And she said, if you're not taking care of yourself, how can you take care of anyone else? Exactly. Yeah, and I got to tell you, Robert, it was hard. It was hard for me to embrace that. And then even my staff and my younger staff, you know, it's just not the way we're conditioned here in this country, you know. And so we had to unlearn the colonized approach and relearn this approach. And the impact on our organization has been almost magical, almost mystical. Just the how we have all sort of leveled up in our performance and our contributions, because we're taking care of ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. And so part of indigenizing our operations has been to introduce regulars or cultural activities and and group activities where we can team build. And so this Sugar Bush experience this morning just really hit it right in the sweet spot. It was something.
You know, and there's talk with my nation about, and there always is, but there's been talk revved up again about starting their own school. And when you think about that, and you think about Porky's, and you think about what Red Schoolhouse tried to do and all the other survival schools across Turtle Island, it might be a time again to start revving that up again.
Well, yeah, and at school, you know, we don't have a whole pipeline from pre-K through elementary through middle school to high school of India, you know, a focused Indian head here in Minneapolis. There isn't, if it was going to exist anywhere, you think it would be here, right? The history we have in education and things. And so even kind of knitting together so we could have immersive language curriculum that kids are entering into before kindergarten and then can stay in all through school. And that just seems fundamental to me. So there's a lot of people working on that. And hopefully, right. And now it sounds like your nation is interested in entering into the conversation. So hopefully someday soon.
Well, and I know those older schools that Ames started, started out every day in a good way. You know, they would start out in a circle and it wouldn't start in with the bell ringing. And because we talk about over the years how education a lot of times was set up in the 1880s to funnel factory workers into factories, and with the bells ringing and going from room to room, and sure. That's not how our people, and I don't think a lot of people learn anymore.
Right. Well, and just that school model, right? Everything, desks in straight rows with military precision, and again with our people, when our history is having American education weaponized against us, right? So just the longer trail, the longer path we have back to indigenizing education. And so, today's experience was really something. And there were a lot of folks out there at the camp that remembered my dad and some of my family from years back, from the founding of MIG Izzy Communications. My sister was I think the first employee for Legacy Communications. And so a lot of nice reminiscing too.
Yeah. And McGeezy, how powerful they are now, but also how powerful they were in their original setting where they were, training college students to be in the news and work in the news and amplify Native news.
Right. So for folks maybe who aren't from this area, you know, McGizzy Communications is one of our longstanding Native orgs that focuses on youth development, youth education, and media in particular. And the founder, Laura Waterman Whitstock, just a revered ancestor now and an AIM founder. And it was her son that was our lead guide at Sugarbush today. And so, so just again, that emphasis on education, that emphasis on, you know, what I would say today, steering our own narrative, creating our own narrative, you know, it's all kind of interconnected.
Yeah, it really is. And, we should, next segment, talk about what you were doing and remind people of all the great organizations that are urban organizations that you belong with and support along with your own, and what's going on at the Capitol, because this is a new dawn and a new day. And I think that's a song, but maybe I can use it.
You can sing it maybe, but yeah, it is a new day. I mean, you could just feel after there were, you know, over a dozen of Native orgs represented in this committee hearing, and we all presented, we were so well prepared, you know, we have professional political handling lobbyists, so many of these emerging younger leaders, you know, I was an elder in this pack, probably the second oldest of us all, and it just makes me feel so, you know, proud and humbled and hopeful when you see, I was telling people, 5 years ago, we couldn't have even done this, what we just did today.
Right, right. That's amazing, and that's worth living as long as you and I have to see this. And it's an amazing. And again, we always talked about for years on this show, whether it was the 2-hour show or the weekly show, that we're really happy about our young ones and the way they're coming up. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are really leading the way, and in a good way.
In a very good way, in a very good way. And I look at some of these young leaders, young leadership that I was with today, and I thought, wow, when I was their age, would I even had sort of wherewithal to appear in front of a fairly imposing, you know, state Senate committee and plead my case? And these guys are miles ahead of where I was at their age.
Well, I can answer that for me, and the answer would be no.
No, same here.
Hey, we're with Robert Lilligren, and we're going to take a quick break here. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. We'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Special Report. A New York grand jury has indicted former President Trump. CBS News anchor Nora O'Donnell has details.
This indictment, filed under seal by the Manhattan DA, could be announced in the coming days. It would also mean that Donald Trump would be asked to surrender and face arraignment on charges yet to be announced.
The grand jury had been investigating Mr. Trump on allegations linked to falsifying business records.
This is about hush money payments made in 2016 by his former fixer, Michael Cohen, to Stormy Daniels, the porn star.
CBS's Robert Costa.
The former president called for protests. He had the expectation of an arrest, and he called for protests. So there's real unease. A lot of officers on edge in New York about what could happen when Trump comes in to be fingerprinted and ultimately arraigned.
Mr. Trump has denied the allegations, and his lawyers say they will vigorously fight this indictment. CBS News Special Report, I'm Monica Ricks.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, your personal injury attorneys with over 35 years of experience. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin's prisons have over 1,000 open spots for corrections officers and sergeant positions. In his budget, Governor Evers wants to raise starting base pay for corrections officers from around $20 to $33 an hour. Right now, prison security employees get a temporary $4 per hour bonus on top of their base pay. Part of the proposed salary increase will come from making that hourly bonus permanent. It's unclear, though, if that will happen, as the GOP-led legislature says they'll rewrite the budget entirely over the next few months. Free community COVID-19 testing ends April 15th. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services announcing the program is winding down. Nearly 3 million tests have been administered since 2021. You can still get tested at a pharmacy after April 15th, but you're going to have to pay for it. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Do you love getting rewards when you shop? Then shop Knucklehead CBD and Vapes with the Knuckleheads Club. Every $10 spent gets you closer to 25% off. No matter what you buy, make sure you buy Knuckleheads. Stop in Saturday and Sunday and get 15% off Wellness and Wellness Plus, including Delta 8, THCP, CBD, and more, while getting points towards your next purchase.
Visit Knuckleheads Milwaukee at 2949 North Oakland Avenue or online at knuckleheads.shop.
Knuckleheads CBD and Vapes, your one-stop smoke shop.
Hey, Wisconsin, the spring election is April 4th. Make sure you're prepared with an ID to vote. If you have a Wisconsin driver's license or state ID, military ID, U.S. passport, VA card, or Wisconsin tribal ID, you're all set. If not, you've got options. For free help getting an ID to vote, call or text Vote Riders at
the relaxed and friendly atmosphere. That's Maggie's Lounge at Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65. More at croonersloungemn.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, this portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, thanks, Ogama. Hey, here, we're here with Robert Lilligren, CEO of the Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And we're celebrating a Twins win, sugar bushing, Trump indicted, and 7 inches of snow coming. And what was happening at the Capitol today with our group of friends, Robert?
Yeah, so it was great. There was a group of us under an umbrella of an effort we call the Urban Indian Legacy Initiative, or UILI, and it's a coalition of 16 of the urban Indian organizations here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and we're seeking capital investment from the state in our facilities, mostly to update and upgrade existing facilities, some new buildings as well. And it's a significant ask. It's, I think now we're at $136 million for, I think, 13 or 14 different projects. And a few things that really stand out for me. One of them is just the collaborative and collective nature of our effort. And we all went in, we're all supporting each other as a one whole ask. And, you know, at government, a lot of times they want things prioritized, or they want to know, you know, how to sort of separate us from each other. And from, but we're standing together. It's like, this is what we need. This is what we're here to ask for. And I just, I'm really, really proud of that, that we have that kind of collaboration going on amongst leadership here. And to note that that has been built over decades, right? And yeah, especially the last decade, where we've really sat down and tried to decolonize our relationships and stop viewing each other as competitors for resources or competitors for service populations, and to really acknowledge that if we work together, we can bring more resources into the community and better serve our people. And this is just a shining example of that.
Yeah, I saw a picture of the director of New Native Theater, Rihanna Yazzie, and I just got to give a quick shout out to them, because my daughter, my first daughter, is in a play that she's doing this this cycle. So we're really excited that Jaleesa is going to be doing her thing with Rihanna. So that's pretty cool.
That is so cool. Yeah, so New Native Theater, Rihanna Yazzie, the founder and director, was there today testifying. And you know, people just brought up all these facts that we don't hear all the time, you know, and just about how rare it is not just to have a Native-founded, Native-run theater company presenting works from a Native perspective, but when and if, when they get their building, they'll be one of the few Native theaters to have a dedicated space. And it was just great to hear Rihanna. And yeah, congratulations on your daughter's performance. New Native Theater does incredible work.
Yeah, I wish I could take credit, but I can't. But I appreciate that. One of the interesting things, too, is that we know where the Native corridor, especially, you know, on Franklin Avenue, there's a lot of the buildings are falling apart. That's just put it straight out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we have these wonderful, iconic organizations, many of them founded by what I think of as our founding generation, you know, the Laura Waterman, Wichita, Clyde Belcour sort of generation. And we're losing those folks. And then these agencies that they help found and fund are now have 40, 50 year old facilities that have been underinvested in, and we're just providing incredible support and services to the community with really subpar facilities. And so the argument that the state should be investing in these organizations serving our people and our land makes all the sense in the world. And to feel like we're getting heard, you know, the proof will be in the pudding. We'll see how it plays out. As you know, the legislative sessions get wildly political as they wind down. So we're paying close attention. Something's got to happen, right? Something's got to happen.
Yeah, it's an awesome feeling. And one of the things, too, that I always appreciate, and when I was at the Capitol, and I think we talked about this last time, about the young warrior who not only is one of the leaders now, but also as a young one when they lost her mother and she was the oldest one, got these services. And so there's proof's in the pudding that how this works and how well this works and how it can work.
Right. You're exactly right. And now there's these generational stories to tell, right? These intergenerational ones, like you're referencing. And just to reinforce that, you know, the term culturally specific, you know, service delivery, but Native people know how to serve Native people, and we do it brilliantly, though we have been starved for resources. And so the argument is fund us directly. We'll do the work. You know, we don't need these layers of intermediaries between us and the resources, you know. So in some ways, I guess that's like building trust, right? Building trust between the Native organizations and the state government. It's like, just trust us. And so now we're able to lift up our work and tell them firsthand what kind of successes we have and what kind of resources we need from them.
Well, I like the fact that your old dear friend, who's Lieutenant Governor, gives us a update every 2 weeks, and that she's been able to talk to the governor in many different ways over the years, but specifically when she's become Lieutenant Governor in that partnership, that the governor gets it. You know, he even said that in the speech that I was there, and we played that speech, that he gets it, that we're not going to tell you what to do, or we're not going to lead the way, you are.
Right. And that is and it's great that he gets it. It was great that he was at our Urban Indian Legacy Initiative rally. He spoke there, hugely supportive. And it's so clear to see Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, our whiter sisters. She has said those words. I've heard her say those exact same things. But more that idea that people know what they need. And in some ways, it's to make sure that we have adequate resources and can get out of our way. So you can really see that through line between Peggy Flanagan, our Lieutenant Governor, Native Lieutenant Governor, and then the Governor, Governor Walz.
Yeah, exactly. You know, as I'm thinking too, because we have quite a few leaders in the state and Senate, Native American, Alicia is like the coming up there. Now I'm thinking too, now who's behind them? Who's coming up next? Because, geez, you know, what's next for Lieutenant Governor, Senator? You know, all these things go through my head, but I got to live a day at a time and just appreciate what's happening right now.
Right. Well, and that's our job now, right? Where we are in our lives and in our trajectory, to make sure we're sort of scanning the horizon, lifting up those voices and those people who can come along next, and to make sure that we're being deliberate and intentional about that. And, you know, it's so clear some of these people, State Senator Mary Prunesh, who is the lead Senate author on the Urban Indian Legacy Initiative bill, she can't even be there because she had another bill in another committee. So my good friend, State Senator Scott Dibble, stepped in and was our champion in this hearing, where to make sure there's the next Peggy Flanagan, right? The next Mary Prunesh, and to make sure that we're watching for them and supporting them. And then to really leverage the role models they have now. When we were younger, there weren't these people in these powerful leadership positions. You know, we had to kind of learn it in the streets,
right?
Pick it up as we went along. But now we have so much more sort of formal pathways for people to follow. And, you know, it's exciting.
Yeah, it really, really is. It's a great time to live. And also, you know, it's not perfect and things aren't perfect, but it's definitely the trail that's being blazed that our young ones can take it to the next level and the next step. And you were the first, you know, a Native American city council member in Minneapolis. And we can't forget that you trailblazed for a lot of us, and you were friends with the lieutenant governor when she was young, and not that you and I are that much older, but no.
Old enough, right? But you can't have a second until there's a first. And you can't have a fifth until there's a first. You can't have a 1,000 until there's a first. So I expect to see those kinds of numbers as we go forward. And part of it isn't just sort of elbowing your way to the table, but then it's changing the culture of government or whatever, corporate or nonprofits even, but making sure that the culture becomes more comfortable for Native people, more welcoming of Native people. I mean, these are institutions that were built to eliminate us.
Right.
You know? And so honor the brave people who are willing to go into them, and then to make sure that we're changing them, we're changing systems. That's a lot of like the work we do at NACDI, at Native American Community Development Institute. You know, we're authentically grounded in community and working for holistic systems change, policy, you know, just boardroom attitudes. It's fascinating work.
It is. And I just got to throw a damper over everything before we let you go, Robert. And one of the things is the shootings. The Republicans are against everything but the things that really matter out there. And I really feel, and Ogama and I talked about this yesterday, it's like I don't feel safe at large groups now, and because it's a free-for-all out there, and we can thank our Republicans for that.
Right. Large groups, grocery stores, elementary schools. I mean, it's tragic. And the problem is the guns. And you can tell me a million times that it's not the guns. It's the guns. If people didn't have guns, they wouldn't be shooting people. I would feel much safer if nobody had guns, you know. But we have this Second Amendment, and, you know, what is it that some of those memes you're saying, you know, that wouldn't it make more sense to regulate guns than drag shows and school libraries? You know?
It's like, exactly. Yeah, let's ban the books here.
It's so upside down.
It is upside down, but that's keep forging ahead with all these good things that are happening in the Native community, and keep an eye on the prize and resist, you know. That's what we talk about here all the time. So Robert, thank you, and thank you for joining us on this momentous day, really. For you guys,
it was a pleasure. Great to see you, Ogama. Great to see you, Robert.
All right, hey, thanks again. That was Robert Lilligren, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities. We'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us. Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
No one should have to choose between a paycheck and their health. Whether it's for a new baby, an unexpected illness, or an aging parent, Minnesotans deserve time to care for themselves and their families. That's why Minnesota Democrats are fighting for all working people to have paid family and medical leave. Learn more about how Democrats are standing up for working families and small businesses at paidleavemn.org. That's paidleavemn.org. Paid for by Minnesota AFL-CIO.
Boost your immunity and help protect your community. COVID-19 is still here, but it's not too late to get your booster. Staying up to date with vaccines can help build protection that has decreased since your last shot and provide better protection against newer variants. Boosters are an important part of protecting yourself from getting seriously ill from COVID-19. To learn more and schedule your appointment, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID vaccine. ramseycounty.us/COVID vaccine.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, this portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
You know, I almost had you do that solo again. I pushed the mute button, you know, but I got it in time, Ogama. So,
hey, that would have been okay. I've done it alone before. It happens. Yeah, you know.
That's right. So, wow, exciting things happening here all over Turtle Island. And again, really excited that something's happening finally with the orange fellow that used to be president of this country.
Yeah.
Ogama, you know, you just think about being on the right and the wrong side of history, what's going on, you know, are we able to talk about history, you know. It's just a weird time to live right now, because I feel like this is one of the times, in many ways, at least the last half, 6 years, that we're going two steps back. But then, you know, we have all this good information and things happening here with our urban Native community, you know, here in Minnesota. People are watching what's going on here and politically in many ways, and how these guys... the last cycle, there was a Republican Senate and, you know, a Democratic House and a Democratic governor, and nothing happened. Nothing got done. And now all these things are happening. We have a $17.4 billion surplus. So it's time to really re-up in what we want to be here in Minnesota, Ogama.
Yeah, we really need to, you know, kind of keep our eyes on the prize, or, you know, keep our goals in mind for what we want to be here in Minnesota. I agree with you. You know, Minnesota is kind of seen as this, you know, really liberal and often compassionate state, you know, where we're working on no-knock warrants being banned. We are a safe haven state. We have right to reproductive health and affirmative gender-affirming care here. But we also have some of the greatest disparities between in education between students of color and white students here in Minnesota, too. So we definitely have our work for us. But I'm really glad to see the work that we are continuing to do that works towards those issues.
Yeah, really good point, too. And, you know, I just talked a little bit to Robert about this, and I know that what you do with your daughter's school, too. It's you know, the Native American kids have, you know, a very low graduation on time, not just here in Minnesota, but nationally. Mm-hmm. And there's many, many reasons behind that. And, one of them is just the trauma that's been passed down, whether through the blood or through what they've gone through. And, you know, going to somewhere like South Dakota, and a lot of times reservations, and how poor they are, and where people are coming from, and the learning curve, and the trauma that's passed down. And we need to be aware of that and really work within those parameters to get healthy and to become learners in many ways, and that it's okay. And I don't know, I'm rambling, Ogama, but you know, you're working deep with your daughter and the school that she goes to, and things like that. Like Santina says, we need more Native instructors and teachers. How do we do that? You know,
right.
The tribes, make it happen and pay for their college and make sure they come back and work for 5 years with their community, things like that? Or what's your thoughts, Ogama?
Well, I don't know that, you know, requirements to come back and teach within communities are necessarily always helpful. But, you know, I think honestly, and I just wrote a proposal for this because I am in the School of Education right now for my degree for Communication Arts and Literature. And I will come out on the other side of this with a teaching degree. And one of the things that I'm proposing is that there be a requirement to teach the history of boarding schools here in Minnesota, both at the university level and I think, you know, even at lower levels. You know, if we can't acknowledge the truth that has happened, including the ethnic cleansing that's happened directly here in Minnesota with the Ho-Chunk and the Dakota people, as well as the Anishinaabe people, and, you know, as a larger topic within the nation, if we cannot acknowledge those truths, if those are not a part of the curriculum, then why would Native students continue to go if their history is just being blatantly ignored, being blatantly erased? Why would they want to become teachers? I went through an entire introduction to education class, and they covered the history of the education system in the United States starting in the early 1400s, 1500s, when this land was beginning to be colonized, and going all the way up until present day. And they covered desegregation and the civil rights movement. They covered a lot of those issues with gender, and they completely ignored boarding schools. It was not a part of the presentation. It was not talked about as a part of the history of education in the United States. And when I brought that up, I was told that that's a separate class, that I need to go and take a Native Studies class to learn that information. And I was just appalled that that was the answer that I was given. What do you mean I need to take a Native Studies class? You have a doctorate in education and you don't understand how intertwined these are, you know?
Right.
That the School of Education doesn't have that as something that's important to them. And I think those things are changing slowly, but until we see that truth, until we're no longer afraid to talk about what happened, that we're going to continue to see a lot of these problems. And, you know, those barriers that you were talking about, too, are ongoing, not just for Native students, but for a lot of students in Minnesota.
Well, no, and one of the things, too, one of the things I wanted to say was that we need somebody like you that's taking these courses to bring this up, because that's probably why, you know, we have a different pieces of history that don't include us. And there's been reasons behind that, because a lot of that history, if it was put out there in real life, people would not be happy with their ancestors. You know, we talk about colonizers a lot of the terms that we hear on the same people, there were settlers. Well, what are they settling? You know, land that's already been settled by indigenous people over 10,000 years. And we can go on and on about that, but it's a lot about the verbiage. And when you're being sent to another class to, it separate us, you know, that we're separating your history over here. You can study your own history, but the real history is here in this class, and we're going to talk about that. So I'm glad you brought something up, because, you know, at least make them pause and think, you know.
Right. Well,
and that's the idea today, but go ahead. Or the people that are in your class, too.
Yeah, and that's the idea, too, is that, you know, it's not for blame, or it's not for, you know, to make everybody feel bad, you know, like they teach about the Holocaust and, you know, what the Nazis did in Germany during World War II. They teach that. They teach it without shame. They teach it and they tell all the students, this is heavy and you need to know this so that we can stop this from ever happening again. And they don't teach the Holocaust here that happened on Turtle Island at all, because they're ashamed of it. And until they can get past their own guilt and that shame about it and talk about it in such a way so that everybody has to carry the weight of knowing what happened, we can't really work towards reconciliation and those types of things. I think we really need to have that as part of the standards for education within the state of Minnesota, that children should know about this, that at the university level, students should be prepared to understand those concepts and how they affected their students that they'll be teaching here in Minnesota. And I'm hoping that changes soon.
Yeah, well, young warriors like yourself will change it. If you don't know your history, you're going to repeat it, and we don't need to repeat a lot of the history. We need, I heard a long time ago, anyone can learn from their own mistakes. It's geniuses that learn from others. Hey, thanks, Ogama. Thanks, Robert Lilligren. If you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. We need to resist, divest, or join a group, run for office. Free.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
You are listening to WAE.